Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and today we have another investor spotlight, Tyron McDaniel. And we're going to be talking about how he started flipping properties, and then that enabled him to build a rental portfolio, and then he went into wholesaling, and then he got into building the block. So let's get into how to go from fixing and flipping to building out the block. Let's get into it.
You mentioned early on, ultimately, your goal was to get into building. So talk to us about that transition and just taking it to the level that you always wanted to get it to.
So, you know, I believe that you should analyze and study markets. And when you do that, then you can start to assess the inefficiencies and where the opportunities were. And one of the things I noticed early on, being from the hood, you know, my neighborhood here in Houston is Fifth Ward. That's where I grew up. It's right outside of downtown Houston. And so one of the things I began to notice about communities like mine, like that neighborhood, and not just here in Houston, but all around the country, being in transportation, I was afforded the opportunity to really travel every state in the country except for Alaska as an adult for the most part, and rode Alaska and what was one other state, I can't remember. But needless to say, so I did a lot of travel and I cross-pollinate that information and those experiences. And one of the things I recognize is that from doing loans, I saw how on the lending side, there was a space in our communities that lenders weren't necessarily serving, which meant that if lenders weren't serving it, then builders weren't even building a product for that space. And the builders that did service that space, they gave us a mint, like you knew it was affordable housing when you looked at it. No one had to tell you because you could look at it and tell, oh, that's affordable housing. That's subsidized. Like it literally advertised it based on the design aesthetics and just how it looked. And so I felt like, you know what? And at this time, this was before, you know, Rick Ross and Buy Back the Block and that whole mantra, you know, so you're talking about the early 2000s, even before the previous crash. And so, you know, I bought my first lot in my neighborhood I grew up in 2006. I paid $7,000 for it. We bought another lot in 2017 to show you what's happening in that area. In 2017, it was 400 square feet smaller than that one, and we paid $45,000. For it. So a 700% increase. Wow. Just on a piece of dirt. But so back when I started buying, I started recognizing that the hood, for in my mind, I just felt like the hood wasn't going to be the hood forever, because in my mind, it's already as bad as it can be. You know, it's already drugs and stuff and deprivation here. So it can't go any lower. It has to go up. And so that was just my premise. And once I started to study finance and business a little bit more, you know, I started to understand from a financial macro perspective how, because it was in a major city, close proximity to downtown, and being in transportation, I understood migration patterns and growth and things of that nature. So I started to get an understanding of how inner city areas were going to be forced to grow as cities began to grow and expand, because here in Houston, even till today, we still have, depending on whose report, one of the longest commute times in the country. Wow. So that means you always have two forces at play in a city like this. There's always a migration of people that don't want to live in a city that going to commute in. And there's always going to be a huge number of people that want to live in the city because they don't want to commute. So all of these converging factors created an opportunity that I was able to recognize in inner city neighborhoods, because, again, this was before it was popular to service these areas, number one. Number two, there weren't a lot of investors there. And number three, you could easily stand out. If you just did just a little bit, it took, you know, it takes just as much to be extraordinary. And so just a little bit here, just a little bit there, putting shutters on your house. So it's basic. Everything is just as big as everybody else, but we put shutters and we stain them. That one little thing stands out, you know. And so different little things that I could see that we could do represented an opportunity for me to service our market in the building and the development space.
Definitely, definitely. And what was that experience like? You mentioned that you purchased a lot in your neighborhood you grew up in. When you bought it, like, did you know exactly what were you going to do with it? Or were you like, you know, let me just buy this lot and see what I'm going to do?
I knew it was a good deal. I could get it for $7,000. My wife was upset with me. She was mad. But I just knew, you know, sometimes you just have a conviction. And back then I couldn't articulate it, you know, like I can now. I wasn't up on all these different macro trends and this, that, and the third, but I just knew that I knew. And again, this was my neighborhood. So at this time I'm probably 25 or whatever, you know, it's probably 27 or 28, but this is the area I've been in since second grade. So I remember when it used to be the bloody nickel, you know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't the bloody nickel no more. It was still the nickel. It was a little blood flowing, but it wasn't the bloody nickel no more. So I had the benefit of history to kind of see where it had come from. And, you know, there was just different things. Again, looking back, I remember, unfortunately, we had a friend that passed when we were teenagers. And so I went to we were at the wake. And in the place, and the wake was in one of the mortuaries in the community. And as we're sitting there, you know, I've always been a reader. So we're sitting in the lobby and I picked up this big white book because it has some cool pictures. Well, this was one of those books that's put out by, like, so basically what happened was our community, it wasn't maybe like the civic group, but it wasn't a civic group. It was something like a civic group got with the city, commissioned a study of what could happen or how would you develop this corridor, one of the main streets in our community. And that's what this book was. So it showed, okay, this is, you know, how you could develop this neighborhood. And if you put properties over here and things of that nature. And so stuff like that, that happened over time, I never forgot. So coming back to when it was time to buy this lot, I was like, man, this area is going to blow. So I just had conviction. And I'd seen enough. And so I took a chance. I didn't really know what I was going to do. I just knew it was a good deal. So I said, worst case scenario, I can sell it for profit or I can actually build on it at some point in time. And so that was my mission. Ultimately, I wanted to build on it, though. That was my ultimate end goal, was to build on it. I ended up selling it instead, though.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And what was, I guess, I don't know if we've ever had anybody on the show who sold a piece of land before. What was that experience like? How does that work?
Yeah. So, I mean, the cool part about land and as an investing space is there's, you know, most people that are new investors tend to shy away from owning rentals because they, you know, tenants, toilets and taxes, if you will. And so, when you get in the land, you don't have any of that. All you have is taxes and then, you know, getting the grass cut from time to time. And so it's really like a hurry up and wait scenario. So the beauty in land is, you know, it's very, very low maintenance and it's really an inflation play. And just like we always say with real estate, if you buy it right, then you can, you know, if you buy, I always say you can't recover from buying something wrong. But if you buy it right, you can recover from almost anything that will happen. You can have all the worst stuff happen, delays, contractors screw up, all this stuff, and you can still recover if you bought it right. So obviously we bought it right. And what happened is I started to build in another part of town that was more expensive. So I went to a part of town that was further along in the gentrification cycle. And today it's the most gentrified part of Houston. It's a part of Houston called the Heights. So when I was buying my lot in Fifth Ward for 70, lots in the Heights were 50,000 each. So for every one I bought in the Heights, I could have been buying seven in my community. That's probably one of my single dumbest business mistakes I made, was going to the other folk community and buying versus staying in my community and just buying up a whole bunch of dirt. But needless to say, I was in the other area of town starting to build. And so I needed to offload that lot so that I could have that capital to further that project along. And had another investor friend that was looking, and, you know, basic contract, sold it to them. Kept trucking.
Got it. So talk to us about your first build.
The first build?
Yeah.
So interesting story. So I had been driving. So I bought a house at 5146 Higgins Street. Like, this house had, I knew it had some roofing issues. Kind of find out it had had a fire. I knew it had some termite issues. I thought it was just in one area of the living room. Come to find out, it was the entire whole front of the house had been eaten. In fact, the 2x4s, when we took the sheetrock down, you could look and you would see the 2x4 and it looked like it was regular, and you grab it and it would literally had the consistency of toilet tissue, like, because the termites had eaten the entire interior of the board. The only thing that was left was the exterior. So like literally it was, there were hollow 2x4s in the wall. It was the craziest thing ever. And so, you know, termites, fire damage, I had a janky contractor. Then on top of that, I had a, you know, I don't like to label people negatively. So it was a brother who had some substance abuse issues in that was around that area. And the house had aluminum siding. So I'd come one day and the whole house, you know, everything right. I come back the next day, half of my siding going on the back. You know, I come with the next day, all that siding going on the back, because he literally taking my siding off my house and go and sell it, you know, to get another hit. And so, man, I just had so many issues with that house that I, after that deal, I said, you know what? I could literally build a house. Building is easier than this. Primarily because with building, there's no getcha, no what I call gotchas. You know, like I won't go have any termite issues like that because I already know I got to replace everything. Everything is brand new. So I put a project together, and this project was in the hood. So after that, that's what made me want to go to a nicer neighborhood, because I don't want to deal with dudes stealing my material. I don't want to deal with this. I'm gonna go over here to where, you know, I'm not in an area that's a little bit better. And so it was a Victorian styled house. It was actually a fairly ambitious project. It was 14 houses that this project was slated for. And what happened? So I'm driving for dollars, driving around looking. I see this sign. I call a guy. Guy says, hey, you know, I'll meet you out there. And literally, I'll never forget, he had a black GMC Envoy. And I'm a big journal note-taking person. And so I always would keep a leather journal with me. In fact, and so this conversation happened in 2005. I still have the notes from that conversation that we had. So for 2 hours, like I had never built anything. All I'd done is volunteered and helped my sister build her habitat home. But I have a thing of this little saying that when I used to do a lot of public speaking, I used to get this acronym called SDSUTN. SDSUTN. It stands for sit down, shut up, and take notes. And that is my philosophy. When I get around people that have my answer or more information than what I have, or maybe not more information, but they just have a different set of information I have, then that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna shut up and take notes versus trying to help them understand how much I know.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.